vistas. A nice day tomorrow, but maybe cooler with rain on Sunday. All those details coming up about an hour from now. Here's what's on tap this morning. Democracy is off the mat and fighting back. A Wisconsin judge on Thursday set a trial date for a civil lawsuit filed against the 10 fake Wisconsin Trump electors and rejected a move to dismiss the case. Meanwhile, Republicans are trying to fight a separate lawsuit, which would undo the current ban on absentee ballot drop boxes. We'll review those cases. Then later, we'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil on how Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has made another move to undo the will of the voters in that state. Not at all any kind of fascist or racist undertones with the move, the stunt that he pulled the other day in Florida. Then in our second hour, the reputation of conservative U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has shifted further from just a careless beneficiary to callous freeloader as dozens of vacations, private jet flights, private helicopter flights, resort stays, and all sorts of VIP access are discovered and have been unreported in a way that would have ended the career of any other judge, and I would dare say any liberal Supreme Court justice. We will talk to Mark Jacob about unbalanced media coverage of the latest right-wing legal troubles, and we'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports as well. Along the way, if you have comments on any of these stories or more, ring us up at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. I say that twice because I'm stalling a bit as I turn the phones on up here on my Lake Wissota computer so I can see that you called in, even though Aaron Zommers is, of course, riding herd on the phone down there as well at the Civic Media headquarters in Madison, where I'm guessing it's, now that I know in person how things work there, Aaron, good morning. It's probably another warm one there.
Yeah, good morning. And yes, it is toasty. I think before I head out today, I definitely am going to look into that thermostat timer.
Or maybe the last person leaving could make some adjustment with some duct tape, maybe a hammer, whatever it takes. You deserve, now that I've been down there and see your conditions, you need a little bit more comfort than what you're getting.
You know, it's still a big step up from the last place.
I got that. That's true. But we don't have to settle for that. So I'm going to be your one man union steward here to try to get things better for you here. Our email address is radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And of course, if you're watching on one of the Facebook feeds that we have here, you can put a comment up and we'll see that. And I should add this more regularly. If you use the Civic Media app, now that, again, I know down there, it's so much easier to see your text messages when you send those in too. So do feel free to make this show even more interactive, even if you're not looking to talk on the radio. If you want to make a comment on, something you saw in sports or the movies, anything that might shift the subject along, we'd be very happy to do that here. So back home after one of those days where, it's not the entire state that I had to drive yesterday, and other people do have longer drives on a more regular basis, but there really is something about either starting your day at, say, the Hone Bridge in Milwaukee and then ending up north, or vice versa, where you really get to see such a great cross-section of the state. And I know from my time in the legislature that there are people who would make that drive from, from the Ashland Bayfield area all the way down to Madison on, a weekly basis, maybe sometimes more often if need be. And we have so many amazing, swaths of the state to see, whether you're going, from west to east all along Highway 29 or 10 or 8, or just taking the interstate like I did. And we are fortunate to have the network that we do here in Wisconsin. It doesn't happen by itself, which kind of gets me back to yesterday's topic of politicians who are allergic to spending money when spending money is what keeps the roads paved and, what keeps our kids educated and everything like that. When you do the maintenance, and Governor Tony Evers likes to talk about, how he's been fixing the damn roads since he became governor. When you look at the ongoing maintenance that needs to be done, that is nothing more than a symbol of caring for the place where you live. I mean, if you've ever swept off, you know, your front porch stoop or whatever the case may be, if you put a little effort into slapping on a new coat of paint, you know that's done out of a measure of pride, not because you feel like foolishly tossing away money. So again, as somebody who has to drive all over Wisconsin for all of my many roles over the years, I just want to again express my thanks for those who actually practice good stewardship, not just of the land in its natural form, but in some of the infrastructure as well. All right, we've got headlines to get to coming up in just a bit on this Friday morning. But this reminder, wherever you're driving and listening across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back. Of the George Lucas movie American Graffiti. We'll talk about the year and its impact coming up in today's music break and history lesson coming up a little later on this hour. Again, our number's here, 844-967-2789. We'd love to have you along with any input that you have on news of the day. This is normally the time where I tell you what's in the daily newsletter that Christina Laurie puts together for Up North News. And in my haste to get settled back in after arriving last night from Milwaukee, I realized I haven't put that in my notes yet. So we're all going to learn together what's in here. Well, a typical Friday morning newsletter from Christina that you can get at upnorthnewswi.com also includes a section called In Case You Missed It. And so links to other stories on our website, for example, people reacting to the news that Old Style Beer is returning home to La Crosse after 24 years. How to see the, Aaron, is it called the Persid Media Shower, I think? Also, 14 Wisconsin State Fair foods that are ranked and reviewed. Wisconsin's mascot returns to the streets of Madison. And how the new progressive majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court can affect you. So for that and clearly a lot more as I scroll through here that Christina's put on, sign up for that newsletter again, upnorthnewswi.com. Check out the website for all of our latest news stories. And again, our social media posts, by and large, you'll find us on social media by searching for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI so you get just the right Up North News site. Aaron was telling me during the break that you could hear the crickets in the background here and maybe even the whir of a fan. So we were playing with the audio levels here. And it reminded me that a neighbor on our street said, "Oh, I was going to honk my horn at you as I was driving by the other morning, but I thought you wouldn't like that." And I said, "No, actually, I would. I think that'd be great if for a home-based radio show as this is for now, that if you're hearing this, if you're hearing, you know, the farmer across the way, you know, running the tractor past and whatnot, I don't have an issue with that whatsoever. So we're all about the natural sound here. And if that includes the crickets, that's great because you know what? It won't be that much longer and we won't be hearing the crickets because they'll be covered by a layer of snow. So I'm going to take this, you know, while I can get it. This is normally where I would tell you about the Milwaukee Brewers and how they did, but they were off yesterday, getting set to start a long road trip, and that trip starts this evening in Chicago with a matchup with the Chicago White Sox. So we'll be following that over the weekend. We'll hopefully on Monday be able to tell you that they're still your first place Milwaukee Brewers, depending on how things go against their old American League rival. Let's give a listen over the weekend to the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support and also on news from the center in Richland Center. All right, as noted in headlines, a Wisconsin judge yesterday allowed a civil lawsuit filed against 10 fake electors for former President Donald Trump to proceed and rejected a move to dismiss the case. The lawsuit is moving ahead after the attorney general in Michigan filed felony charges last month against their 16 Republicans who acted as fake electors for Trump, submitting false certificates that claimed they were the legitimate electors despite Joe Biden's victory in the state. It's all part of a scheme that, you know, was hatched by members of the Trump campaign. It's all part of the latest indictment that Donald Trump has been charged with. A tentative trial date has been set in Trump's case for early January of next year. But back to the Wisconsin lawsuit. It was filed by two of the legitimate Biden electors here in Wisconsin and another voter. And it seeks $2.4 million from the fake electors and two of Trump's attorneys, alleging that they were part of a conspiracy by Trump and his allies to try to overturn his loss in the 2020 presidential race. It also seeks to disqualify the Republicans from ever serving as electors again. Republicans again claimed that they were simply there as a legal contingency to preserve an ongoing legal strategy. But as has long since been determined, there was no legal strategy. There was no fraud, and they knew going in that there wouldn't be, that they were going to claim fraud. And so this whole thing does appear to be part of a concocted scheme. The only question, really, is the deniability of the fake electors themselves. Were they duped, or were they, much like the getaway driver in a bank robbery, they were still part of the process, despite, you know, how little or how much they were involved. One of the attorneys, you know, bringing the lawsuit said he was pleased that, you know, the trial will move forward, saying our democracy matters, that according to attorney Scott Thompson, so we must seek accountability for those who attempt to undermine it. Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington has scheduled this case, this civil lawsuit, to go to trial by jury in September of 2024. That's just 2 months before the next presidential election. And again, there were fake elector slates in other states as well. But in this particular one, you've got the civil lawsuit, but you also have a complaint that has been filed against them that was brought with the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And it should be noted that this same judge, Frank Remington, back in May, ordered that the Wisconsin Elections Commission must listen to that complaint again. Previously, they did not take any action on this complaint against the fake electors. But as we all noted in jaw-dropping astonishment at the time, one of the commissioners didn't recuse himself. One of the Republican members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Bob Spindell. Why should he have recused himself? Because he was one of the fake electors. And he still is on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, despite all of this. And so the judge said the commission has to hear it again, this time without Spindell. On another matter, Republican state legislative leaders and other Republican-leaning groups are moving to intervene on a separate lawsuit filed not long ago that seeks to undo the current ban on absentee ballot drop boxes and other measures that have restricted voting in Wisconsin. Both the Republican Party of Wisconsin and the Republican National Committee filed a motion on Tuesday to intervene in the case. That, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Tylan Katzenberger, in an article that is in this morning's edition. Republicans are trying to cast the effort to undo the voting restrictions as some kind of an attack on election integrity. Rona Romney McDaniel, the RNC chairwoman, says election integrity is, quote, under attack from far left dark money groups bent on destroying basic voting safeguards. This from the group that gerrymandered the maps and continued to try to make it tougher to vote. Democratic groups note that the restrictions on drop boxes unnecessarily disenfranchise voters. They say in the lawsuit that drop boxes are, quote, critical for voters, some of whom are unable to vote in person because of disability or scheduling conflicts or a lack of transportation or other hardship. And this is all true. It's true that drop boxes were nothing new in Wisconsin, had been used for a long time. Not only did Republicans not have an issue with drop boxes previously, they got on board with them before Democrats did, in terms of truly encouraging absentee voting by their older party members and activists. It's just that Democrats eventually caught up and said, yeah, we should be encouraging that, encouraging early voting, encouraging the use of drop boxes for convenience. But then Trump lost, And again, as we noted, he was going to flail at anything, any kind of excuse, trying to grab some kind of either a legal toehold or an argument that would resonate with enough Americans. And that included attacking absentee balloting, early voting, drop boxes, and constantly implying that there was something corrupt about them without a shred of evidence. And now, as we mentioned a couple of weeks back, you see that most of the rest of the Republican Party has come back to the notion of encouraging people to vote early. They're no longer going along with parroting his lines of, oh, there must be something funny about absentee ballots. There must be something funny about early voting. No, they're back on board with that. They even got Trump to say something to that effect a couple of weeks back. So if that's the case, then let's undo the theater that conservative justices on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court went along with when they banned drop boxes. And let's again let the Wisconsin Elections Commission have the ability to offer the guidance that's necessary to make voting as easy and convenient as possible for everybody who is eligible to vote. So this will now come up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, almost assuredly it will, which is now under progressive control. That does not necessarily mean that it will change. The progressive majority could just as easily look at, the way statutes are written right now and make some other type of determination. But it is well and good that they do take another look at it. It's just that with Republican legislators saying that they're now going to intervene in this lawsuit as well to try to uphold the drop box restrictions, it's worth noting that the Republican legislators will need lawyers to, argue on their behalf in this case. Who's going to pay for that? You. You and I will pay for this. Taxpayers, once again, will foot the bill for attorneys that are helping Republicans in court make it harder for the rest of us to vote. But that's what we face, as we move forward here and try to, again, restore voting rights for as many people as we possibly can. One more quick note. We're going to talk more about this with Mark Jacob in our second hour. But in case you won't be around, we want to share the news that ProPublica has continued to investigate the travels of Justice Clarence Thomas and the things that he has been willing to accept from people. And that would maybe be fine if they were disclosed. But he hasn't disclosed them. He's disclosed basically the some of the smaller items, basically the equivalent of a cup of coffee here. But there's actually so much more, according to a new ProPublica report. The gifts that he has received and not disclosed have included at least 38 vacations, 26 private jet flights, 8 flights by helicopter, a dozen VIP passes to sporting events, stays at luxury resorts in Florida and Jamaica. And Thomas appears to have broken the law by failing to disclose flights, cruises, and sports tickets. What needs to happen here is a measure of accountability. And all I ask you to do is replace the name of Clarence Thomas, with the name of any liberal Supreme Court justice. And you tell me what Republicans in the United States Senate would be doing right now. And you know exactly what they would be doing. And they would probably be right. If a progressive judge was invested in that much corruption of accepting gifts from billionaires, some of whom have cases before the court. Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil is coming up next here up north. We're back now on Up North News Radio with our good friend Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom's national correspondent out on the left coast. Kia, hello. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Pat. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've got a busy week, kind of a hodgepodge of things. that are not typical for, you know, a week. It's not every week that you have a special election, especially one in another state that we would be paying attention to. But a lot of folks paid attention to a special election in Ohio this week. And did I see right? Is this thing like costing northwards of $30 million to hold this turkey of a referendum that ultimately failed?
Yeah, that is what Ballotpedia, which is sort of an online database of all things elections, estimated. This was an estimate last week that said it was over 32 million, roughly split 50-50. And again, this was a week ago, so or several days ago. So that number could be 35 million, 40 million. You know, the last few days before an election are always, you see a flood of TV ads and mailers. So it'll be probably another few days at least before we get a final number, but it's a ton of money.
That's a lot of money for what would have been a, well, I continually refer to it as essentially, you know, moving the goalposts on, you know, what it takes to amend the Ohio State Constitution. So with that attempt having been shot down, you don't need a supermajority. You just stick with the majority rules that you've always had. Ohio has to do this all over again now for the actual abortion constitutional question in November, don't they?
They do indeed. So this, you know, there's going to be a measure on the ballot in November that will basically would override Ohio's current abortion ban. And, you know, this measure is not a this one yesterday is not or on Tuesday is not quite a perfect indicator, but it's pretty close. I think you can expect that, you know, barring some massive sea change in the electorate or in the current state of issues in the country, you can expect that voters will want to support abortion rights in Ohio again. We've seen that in Kansas and Kentucky and pretty much every state where it's been on the ballot, which is why you saw Republicans try to rush this past election through, you know, throw every which strategy at the wall to see what might work, and none of them did. You know, voters support abortion. The really intense anti-trans rhetoric they used was ineffective. And perhaps most obviously, I'm not sure why they thought getting voters to give up more of their own power would be effective. It clearly was not.
No. And so you have conservatives and Republicans who once again are seen, demonstrated clearly that they're not in line with mainstream values. But that takes us to the Milwaukee presidential primary debate for the Republicans coming up now in under 2 weeks. And we'll talk about the field, you know, who's qualified for the debate so far. And I know it's going to be on Fox. And so therefore, I can't say that the questions are going to be as, you know, what you and I would write. But you would think one of the questions has to be, what are you going to do? Are you going to stick to your far right response, or are you able to see now that the Republican Party, or at least its presidential candidates, have to come a little bit, you know, have to moderate their positions off the extremes of the abortion question? I just wonder if they'll be asked about that in Milwaukee.
I'm sure there will be an abortion related question, especially coming on the heels of the Ohio result. How they answer that will tell us a lot. You know, there is no consensus within the Republican Party on how to handle this. The fact that voters hate their position on it. And I think at this point, it's safe to say that with certainty. That's why you see, you know, even Donald Trump, who overturned Roe v. Wade, he has talked about that, but he has very much shied away from any further restrictions. You see Mike Pence going in the total opposite direction, calling for a national ban. And then there's like everything in between, basically. And so they're really caught in a tricky situation, though, because their primary base wants an abortion ban, but the vast majority of general election voters don't. So anything they say to try to help themselves now will only hurt them next year.
Yeah, without a doubt. Do we know roughly who all is in, or I guess it's almost like the NCAA tournament. Do we know who's on the bubble of maybe not making it?
Yeah, so we do know who's in. The folks who have qualified as of, you know, this week are former President Donald Trump, who is not committed to doing the debate yet, but he has qualified. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, has qualified. Tim Scott, the South Carolina senator. Nikki Haley, the former South Carolina governor. They've both qualified. Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the sort of anti-woke tech entrepreneur, has qualified, as has Chris Christie, Doug Burgum, and Mike Pence. So most of the field is going to be on the stage, which means it could be, a complete clown car similar to 2016.
Oh, it feels like just haven't learned much of anything. Well, let's talk about Ron DeSantis on there, who will again be able to, crow about taking again this extreme, quote unquote, law and order position, because this week, for the second time, he, as governor of Florida, has removed an elected official from their position because he didn't like what they were doing. It's an amazing power that a governor has, and very recklessly used, it appears, by DeSantis.
Yeah, and it's a question of whether he's tech legally allowed to do this, but questions of legality seem to matter increasingly little to Ron DeSantis. So on Wednesday, he suspended the elected state attorney of the Orlando area, Monique Worrell, who is a Democrat and a Black woman. She was elected again by the people of the Orlando area overwhelmingly. But because she has ideological differences with Governor DeSantis, he has suspended her from her position. The same thing he did last year to a different prosecutor who he disagreed with. I don't think it is a coincidence that this is coming after he's had just an absolutely brutal stretch of campaigning. His poll numbers are slagging, his donations are a mess, he's fired his campaign manager, his donors are abandoning him. And even the polling shows that his obsessive focus on woke isn't resonating. Voters care more about the traditional Republican, often racist, but law and order, hard on crime strategies. And so he's doing that because he sees that that's his potentially only path back to being competitive. He is going back to the well of things that have served him well in Florida because he can't figure out how to run nationally.
Right. And again, helpful in a primary, going to be helpful in red states if he were to become the nominee, but does absolutely nothing in a general election setup. So while we're on the subject of conservatives being out of touch, there's the United States Supreme Court and polling that is being done on them. And again, with a lifetime appointment, what do you care what the polling says? But I always find it interesting to see what the American people think of a court that has become increasingly political. What are Americans saying nowadays?
Yeah, they are not thrilled with the Supreme Court. Approval of the court sits at 40%, according to a July survey from Gallup, which is a nonpartisan organization that surveys a host of different issues, the Americans' views on different issues. And they've been tracking views of the court for over two decades. And 40% is the lowest approval rating ever. And that's been the number for most of the past couple of years. You see that decline predated the Dobbs decision last year, actually. You've seen that number continue to erode, particularly among Democrats in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision, which repealed Roe v. Wade. The decline is mostly among Democrats and independents. Republican support for the court of Republican voters support has actually increased in the last couple of years, which tells you a lot. Because what the court's been doing is, taking away the right to abortion, targeting LGBTQ individuals, striking down gun safety laws, striking down worker protection laws, making it harder for unions to organize, a host of things that are extremely ideologically right wing. And, so they've gained a couple points with Republican voters, but, 17% of Democrats now approve of the court, which is just an abysmal number.
And yet, turning to the Democrats now,
Yep.
they are again not doing nearly enough to endear themselves to, moderate or independent voters. The polling numbers for President Biden aren't nearly what he would like them to be. And yet here we sit a year after, the CHIPS Act passed, and of course the Inflation Reduction Act with all of the provisions there that are going to tackle climate change while adding jobs at the same time. And yet, still there's this disconnect. Do you get the impression any mainline Democrats are sounding alarm bells, or are they actually going to start responding to this and telling Americans more about what exactly they've done and what is still in the pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely the sounding of alarms. I also think there's a few reasons I think this disconnect exists. I think one, a lot of this genuinely impactful, transformative legislation is for infrastructure and manufacturing and energy, things that take years to really ramp up and see the results of. And so when voters are faced with, a year and a half of high costs as they have been for, since mid-2021 into early 2023, what's coming in a few years is harder to sell them on. The second thing is Democrats are not the best at messaging issues. It also, Biden has had an incredible first term in terms of accomplishments, but the man is not the most eloquent speaker, let's say. And so, he's not Barack Obama, who could deliver a rousing speech pretty much every week of the year. And so it's harder to break through when you're kind of just a, more generic speaker like he is. But that is why you need, you've seen them try to have like Pete Buttigieg go out and talk more, and folks like that. And I also think the third issue is that, as inflation has dropped and wages have grown, that's been happening for several months now. But I think the longer that goes on, you'll start to see more voters feel better about things. Ideally, for the Democrats, from their perspective, that'll really start to kick in early next spring, assuming the economy continues to trend upwards. I do think you'll see some numbers shift in their direction. But the last issue is, the media spent 2 years slagging on the economy, and even now we're seeing as the numbers are better, there's still a always a it's often framed in the, but will it hold, or
Yes.
the way they frame things is not the same way they did during the Trump era, even if the underlying numbers are very similar. And media does matter. The way you frame things, that's what people read, that's what they see on TV, so it matters.
It is. And they're always erring on the side of doom and gloom. Yes, lest they be accused of becoming cheerleaders for simply, saying what the economy is doing in terms of its positive numbers. However, when the president does want to speak and speak from the heart, he does do so eloquently. And that included recent remarks about book banning. And I think he just came right out and said it, that book banning is about as un-American as it gets.
President Biden, like you said, once in a while he really hits. And on Tuesday he was at the Grand Canyon in Arizona, highlighting a separate effort. But he did take time to, criticize those who are trying to ban books, whether it's, that's happening in a lot of states across the country. It's back to school season now. We're gonna see more stories about groups like Moms for Liberty, which is a far right group that tries to get books banned from schools and libraries. They're going to keep doing that, even though it's really unpopular. And so Biden pretty much said, if you're banning books, you're trying to ban our history, and we only learn, and we need to learn the truth to fully recognize our history and make America, live up to the promise of its founding. And that's something that you would think everyone could agree on, but apparently nowadays that is a just only one party holds that position.
It's weird that only one party holds the position of being for science, for education, and for voting rights. And yet that's where we find ourselves in the year 2023. Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kia Vakil. Hey, thanks so much. As always, hope you have a great weekend.
You bet. Thanks, Pat.
All right, we'll take a break here. Again, you can read what Kia does over at our website, Courier Newsroom, or upnorthnewswi.com. You could look on couriernewsroom.com too, but it's so much faster to head directly to the source, upnorthnewswi.com. Today's history lesson and music break coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
Three o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad flags on.
It would be fair to say that the first big revival of 50s oldies music kicked off on this day in 1973. When the film American Graffiti, by this new up-and-coming director named George Lucas, opened in theaters. It was set in 1962 and created a wave of nostalgia for songs from the 50s and early 60s. It led to the creation of the TV series Happy Days. And it also set in place, in my mind, a way of doing the math. Because as a kid in the mid-70s, the music from the mid-50s was ancient to me. I hadn't been born yet. And yet, once I got to be an adult and did the math and said, oh, so really only 20 years back and they're doing a nostalgia wave, that would mean right now there'd be young people who are hearing music from the year 2003 who think that's ancient history. That's depressing. Let's do some birthdays. Eric Carmen is 74 years old today. He had some solo hits, but you first heard him with the Raspberries. This is the same guy rocking out here who did songs like All By Myself. He was born in Cleveland on this day in 1957. This is Go All the Way. Never knew how complete I could be. She kissed me and said, baby, please go away. On this day in 1992, the Mall of America opened in Bloomington, Minnesota, then the biggest mall in the country. Turns 31 years old today, and I have to say that as someone who lived near there when it opened, and at the time had an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, that was manna from heaven to be able to take your young daughters to a mall with an amusement park in the middle of it, you know, any time of year. Gets a little cold up here in the Midwest during the winter time. The mall's definitely had its ups and downs. There's a top level that was like the entertainment district for a while in the Twin Cities and now is pretty well abandoned except for a comedy club and a Hooters. Joe Jackson is 69 years old today, born in Stratfordshire, England on this day in 1954. Songs like Always Something Breaking Us in Two, and of course this one is Steppin' Out. While we wait for him to actually begin singing some lyrics to us, I'll tell you that it was on this day in 1929, Babe Ruth became the first baseball player to hit 500 home runs with a dinger in Cleveland. Actor Chris Hemsworth is 40 years old today. And it was on this day in 1995 that a movie opened starring Michelle Pfeiffer as an inner-city school teacher. Dangerous Minds opened in theaters this day in 1995 with Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise on the soundtrack. And this is the part where we find out, did Aaron play the Coolio version, or is he about to punk us with some Weird Al Yankovic?
Not this time. This is the real one.
Okay, but what do you actually hear in your head when you hear this coming up? What are the first words?
My mind is gone. I'm the man of the land. I'm into discipline. I've got a Bible in my hand and a beard on my chin. Yeah, I know all the words to Amish Paradise.
I know you do, and it's one of the many reasons I admire you and yet worry about you at the same time.
That's
and
fair.
Finally, on this day in 2009, Lady A, known then as Lady Antebellum, releases perhaps the quintessential song about drunk dialing. For me, it happens all the time. It's a quarter after one. It's really too bad our cell phones, you know, in the middle of the night don't have like a little message that flashes on saying, Remember, you promised never to call this loser ever again. The crossover hit went to number one on the country chart and number two on the Hot 100 chart and sold some 9 million digital downloads. And that's our history lesson and music break for today. Well, one little sports note, just because I don't know if I've ever asked Aaron the degree to which he follows the English Premier League, but a new season gets underway this weekend, and where did I see the story? It was basically about NBC Sports. This is now they're going to be their 11th season of covering the Premier League, and when they first got that contract, I recall thinking at the time that that was, you know, quite the gamble because, you know, people knew of soccer, but, you know, would they really know it from the, you know, standpoint of following it on TV, you know, on American TV with any regularity? Now, I can't tell you if it's been a, you know, a moneymaker for NBC or not, but they certainly have, you know, embraced it. They've paid for the contract, so they're going with it. And they say they're just continuing to grow the fan base. And frankly, the, you know, the 20 top clubs in England all have U.S. followings of some sort or another. We probably, a lot of us know it better from just following, you know, the series Ted Lasso. But in terms of the actual sport, Aaron, was there ever a time that you followed that or had a favorite team, anything like that?
Not really. Some of my friends were into it, but I didn't really used to be into sports at all, honestly. Especially because by the time I was old enough to make my own decisions about what I was watching on TV, I found out about things like CTE and American football. And I was like, oh, sure. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Nope. I totally understand that. I know that in the beginning, if somebody said, would you follow a club? I would have said Chelsea because that's the name of our younger daughter. And I, you know, we did not know that at the time when we had her, but later discovered there was a Chelsea soccer team. And so, you know, we actually did have, I got her a little Chelsea jersey and we followed them for some time. I think that's kind of faded. My real introduction to the fandom of the Premier League came during those 3 years that I lived in the Caribbean on Grand Cayman, which is a British territory. So there were a lot of things to get used to in terms of, you know, British government and the currency system, you know, the financial system, the political system. But again, because of the time zone change, any Saturday morning, if you woke up early and you looked at some of the, you know, the pubs around Georgetown, I mean, they are busy as all get out the way that American bars are, you know, on a Sunday afternoon for football. But they're going strong 5-6 o'clock in the morning, getting ready for English Premier League matches. And so, yes, of course, it does have worldwide fandom and it is growing in the United States. And it will be, you know, airing again starting this weekend with NBC airing matches on Peacock and USA Network as well, trying to, again, bolster interest in the Premier League. We've received a couple of comments from folks who are watching our live feed on Facebook about things. We'll try to address some of those about topics that are in the news. And we'll also have Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio. When we continue on this Friday, we'll be back. You're Up North.